This is Speaking of Faith, First Person. This online exclusive is part of our continuing search for fresh ways to think and talk about the current economic crisis. I'm Larissa Anderson, poetry producer with Speaking of Faith. Here, I speak with psychologist and poet Anita Barrows. She's published several translations, including Rilke's Book of Hours, and her latest book of poetry is titled Kindred Flame.
In what ways do you consider this a moral or a spiritual crisis of your own or of our cultures?
Well, I'll start with the culture first because I think that we're all embedded in that. I think our culture has been so much, since the founding of this country, a culture of desire, a culture of greed, a culture of entitlement. And so in many cases, certainly in the course of our history, I think our actions have been based on a sense that what we need to do and what's going to make us happy or fulfilled is to satisfy our desires as fully as possible. And I think this has gotten us into a lot of trouble, for a number of reasons. For one thing, kids are brought up to think that, what they have to be about is getting things, whether those things are to do with status or with material goods. I think that that's pretty much been our mode for a good long time in this country. And I think we've bottomed out now. And I think the moral crisis that we're facing, and we're all implicated in this, and I'll look at my own part in it in a moment. I think the moral crisis is about how our individual need satisfaction is now in tremendous conflict with the survival of life on our planet. And what are we going to choose? Are we going to choose to drive the SUV just because we feel like it and because it fits in with our life? Or are we going to say, no, I have to make some changes? And I think even the framing of those changes as sacrifice is going to get us in trouble. Because sacrifice means that we're depriving ourselves in some way of something that we've considered essential. And I think another piece of the moral crisis is that we're now coming face to face with the fact that the things that we've considered essential haven't really satisfied us. In terms of the rate, the numbers of people in this country taking antidepressants and anti-anxiety medication and the amount of crime and, all sorts of symptoms that the society is really unraveling. We haven't fulfilled ourselves with all of this. In terms of my own self, moral crisis, I am having to look at the same issues on a minor scale. I was a single parent. I raised two kids who are now young adults, and I have a granddaughter. And a lot of my personal resources, all of my personal resources, pretty much went into that. And I'm living in a house that I'll never pay off because I've had to borrow against it in order to secure my kids' education and all of that. And I think the moral crisis that I'm facing has to do with how I spend the next, hopefully, 30 years of my life. I'm 62. If I have another 30 years, I'm certainly not going to spend them the way it was assumed when I was in my 20s, that I could spend them, traveling, staying at home and writing. I now see no way, actually, to retire. But I also don't want to particularly. And so I'm having to look at what my own real needs are and somehow accept the fact that a lot of the things that I thought might be possible in my life probably won't be possible, given the economic situation.
As you look at that, what moral or spiritual resources or virtues are you bringing to approaching this crisis in your own life or in your family or in, you know, other community settings?
I think a number of things. I come from several different traditions. I was raised as a Jew. I had rabbi grandfathers, and I became a Catholic in midlife and have done Buddhist practice for many years. And at their essence, all three of those traditions emphasize community. They emphasize, you know, at their very, very best, not necessarily the way they're lived out in the world, but at their very, very best, there's an emphasis on community and on taking care of others and on our spiritual responsibility as, you know, beings in this world to be connected to others. And so that helps a lot, actually, because it makes it much clearer that we're not each of us alone, that we are part of a whole, and that if any one of us is suffering the effects of this downturn, so are the rest of us, and that we're really summoned at this point, we're really called to take a look at how we care for each other. And so, you know, what in Buddhism is a sense of radical interconnectedness is really, I think, what I call on for that. I mean, I think our survival depends on knowing that if there is suffering somewhere on the planet, you know, be it an ecosystem, a species, a group of human beings, that we're all implicated in that suffering and we all need to do something about it.
Well, and what are you doing now that is different?
Some very simple things that I'm doing that are different have to do with, I have a vegetable garden out in my backyard, and, you know, I was raised as an urban person, and I've lived as an urban person, but it seems like a good idea to learn how to grow some of my own food, and my granddaughter and I have a good time with the vegetables. And there's a great deal of pleasure, actually, in feeding people. You know, we have a lot of friends coming over to the house for dinner, and it's great to feed people from things I've grown with my own hands. And so I think what I'm trying to do differently in my life is cultivate more awareness of the particular issue of how we feed ourselves, and to eat more locally grown food. And with that, also to have more of a sense of my own connectedness to these processes of eating and transportation and the ways in which that affects the planet and, you know, what a difference it makes if I buy a mango from Chile as opposed to waiting for mangoes to come into season somewhere closer. So that awareness has really, really come to me. And I think also in terms of certain choices I've made, I travel a lot less in these last years than I used to travel. I used to try to get to Europe almost every summer. Now my traveling is to go and work with a counseling center in the occupied West Bank, and I feel like I can, you know, I have, my resources economically are more limited, and I really can't afford the kinds of vacations that I took before or assumed that I would still be able to take at this point in my life. But I do want to stay connected to this one counseling center with whom I've done consultation and for whom I've done seminars. They work with children in the West Bank. And so in a sense, it's really deepened my commitment and my focus since I have to allocate my resources differently.
What kind of wisdom and leadership are you looking for at this time, so, something close to your life? Where are you finding that?
The wisdom and leadership closest to my life comes, I think, from two places. One is my granddaughter and other children and the ways in which I observe their closeness to nature and their capacity to be satisfied by small things and you know, to enjoy spending an afternoon stomping around in mud puddles. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I work with kids in my therapy practice as well, and I'm really trying to just look at what their real needs are and to realize that these real needs are the ones that need to be served. And kids, I think, have a great deal of wisdom about the planet. I had one little boy in my therapy practice who was talking to me about a bird that was going extinct. And he was drawing a picture of the bird, and he said, "This bird only can say meep, meep." And then he looked at me and he said, "How would you like it if your entire species was going extinct and all you could say about it was meep, meep?" And, and we spoke a lot, that child and I, about how we need to be the voice then for these birds and for others that are in trouble and endangered. So there's some wisdom there. I think the other source that I find is in the work of my great beloved friend Joanna Macy, who is a Buddhist teacher. She's also my collaborator in translating Rilke, so I'm very lucky to spend a lot of time with her. And her work is really focused on what she calls the Great Turning, which is a concept that we stand now at a moment of opportunity, and specifically because things are unraveling, we can make deep changes now in the ways in which we live on this planet. And all of that comes with the caveat that even so, we may have pushed things so close to the edge that the planet and we may not survive. But for as long as we're here, we can make the kinds of radical changes that have to do with being interconnected, acknowledging our interconnectedness, consuming less, really taking care of the essential needs and recognizing the superficial needs for what they are. And so Joanna's work, which has been really a guide for me for the last 20 years, is even more important to me now.
It sounds like you really translate this economic crisis to kind of an environmental crisis.
Yes, I do see the economic crisis basically as a crisis driven by our failure to recognize that we're part of a living system. In system theory, if any one aspect of the system gets out of control, you know, like a cancer growing in a body, the whole body is affected. And I think what's gotten out of control is our overweening sense of our importance as human beings and our entitlement to fulfill ourselves in whatever ways we can. And, you know, through what my friend Joanna Macy calls the industrial growth society, we have really managed to wreck the system that we're dependent on.
And you mentioned Joanna Macy is translating Rilke.
Yes.
Is there any kind of work of Rilke's or any, I mean, you're a poet as well. I mean, is there any poetry that you're turning to or that you're looking to as a resource?
Yes. Well, you know, she and I are currently working on a new volume of Rilke's work. We're editing a volume and doing some translation for it. And in Rilke's ninth elegy, the ninth Duino elegy, he speaks about the purpose of human life on this earth being to somehow speak for what can't speak for itself, very much you know, in the order of what I was saying about the little boy and the endangered bird, that we may be here to give voice to the earth and to somehow allow the natural world to transform itself through us into a kind of consciousness. Rilke's poetry helps me enormously. Other poetry does as well. Pablo Neruda's odes to ordinary things, where he speaks of the virtues of a tomato or a pair of socks, very, very much helped me to realize that it is in the ordinary things that we find the sacred, the transcendent, that there is no transcendent divorced from embodiment that we can recognize as human beings, given that we are embodied.
You've been listening to psychologist and poet Anita Barrows. Her latest book of poetry is Kindred Flame. This is Repossessing Virtue, Speaking of Faith's continuing exploration of the economic crisis. To hear more of our coverage, subscribe to our podcast or visit speakingoffaith.org.